It could be severe today. The upper level trough will slide east of the Midwest tomorrow with a dry weather pattern setting up through midweek. The next storm system approaches the area Thursday. Highs today will range from the mid-40s in northern Iowa to the mid-70s along the Ohio Valley. Lows tonight will range from the upper 20s in northern Iowa to the upper 30s in southeastern Missouri and western Kentucky. The forecast for east central Illinois this afternoon, cloudy and breezy with scattered showers and isolated thunderstorms. It will be much cooler with the temperature falling into the mid-40s by late afternoon. The wind from the northwest at 15 to 20 miles per hour with gusts to 30. Tonight, mostly cloudy, blustery, and cold with a low of 33. The wind out of the northwest at 15 to 20 miles per hour with gusts to 30 miles per hour. Tomorrow, mostly sunny with a high of 52 and a west wind from 10 to 15 miles per hour with gusts to 25 miles per hour. Tomorrow night, partly cloudy with a low of 42. A southwest wind from 10 to 15 miles per hour with gusts to 25. Wednesday, mostly sunny and warmer with a high of 64. Wednesday night, mostly cloudy with a low in the mid-40s. Thursday and Thursday night, mostly cloudy with a chance of showers and thunderstorms. Expect a high in the mid-60s and the low in the mid-50s. And the outlook for Friday, partly sunny and warmer with a high in the mid-70s. At noon central time, most locations reported cloudy skies and temperatures in the 40s at Rockford, 47, 48 at O'Hare, and in Carbondale, where light rain was reported, it was 45 at Bloomington, 46 at Mattoon. In South Bend, 46, Lafayette, 49. Terre Haute reported light rain and fog and 48. Indianapolis reported 48 degrees and rain. Champaign-Willard Airport reported cloudy skies with fog. At the top of the hour, the temperature 46, the dew point 42, the relative humidity 86%, the barometric pressure 29.53 and rising. And at 12:39, 47 degrees in Urbana on the campus of the University of Illinois, the sky is cloudy. Some unusual signs have appeared in the parks of Tokyo. The city is asking people not to picnic under the cherry trees. That's a national custom at this time of the year. But this year, some people think we should be mourning, or the citizens of Tokyo should be mourning the victims of last month's disasters, not celebrating the coming of spring. NPR's Anthony Kuhn reports.
Spring seems far from Tokyo's Ueno Park on a chilly Sunday under steely gray skies. The signs reflect the conservative views of Tokyo's 78-year-old mayor, Shintaro Ishihara, campaigning for a fourth term in this month's elections. In spite of the signs, hundreds of people are picnicking or strolling in the park. Walking among them is Maku Akasaka. With recorded music and a bottle of sake, he's out campaigning as the sole candidate of the obscure Smile Party. He says he disagrees with the governor's injunctions against hanami, or cherry blossom viewing.
Refrain from entertainment, including hanami, is a negative mind. Most important thing for Japanese people is to rebuild. And so they need positive mind.
Hanami, many Japanese will tell you, is an expression of the aesthetic sensibility in the Japanese soul. Or at least, says magazine editor Yoshi Tsujimura, it's a very popular sort of affectation.
Even if you're just there to have fun and enjoy the beautiful cherry blossoms, it's a part of Japanese people's character that they have to appreciate it, or at least act like they appreciate it on a level beyond mere physical beauty.
On a spring day with soft rays of sun, flower petals fall restlessly. There's no peace in my heart.
That's Tokyo resident Hitomi Onishi reading the work of 9th century court poet Tomonori Kino. She and her girlfriends are playing karuta, a favorite hanami game in which players take turns reciting poems from a deck of cards. Nearby, schoolteacher Masujio Shimozaki sits on a tarp under the cherry blossoms, enjoying some sushi, cheese, and whiskey with four friends. Shimozaki says he doesn't need Governor Ishihara's civics lessons about how to respond to natural disasters.
I'm the sort of person that, if you tell me to look right, I look left. It's important to have a diversity of opinions, but we definitely brought less food than in years past. We're trying to conserve in our own way, while still enjoying each other's company.
He mentions hakanasa, one of several Japanese words, to describe human sensitivity to the poignant fact that cherry blossoms, like life and beauty themselves, are short-lived and that nature produces tsunamis as well as spring blossoms.
I think beauty and pain exist together and can't be separated. When you look at the cherry blossoms, there's hakanasa in their beauty.
Many Japanese point to the work of the 17th century haiku master Basho. Many of his later works are characterized by karumi, a Buddhist-influenced sense of lightness and detachment sketched in this poem. Come, see the real flowers of this painful world. Anthony Kuhn, NPR News, Tokyo.
Google is getting a new CEO who is no stranger to Google. Larry Page co-founded Google as a young Stanford postgraduate and was briefly CEO before handing the position to the more experienced manager, Eric Schmidt. Page is taking the reins of a company that is very different from the one he helped found 13 years ago. NPR's Renee Montaigne spoke about the future of Google with Stephen Levy. He's a senior writer at Wired Magazine. He's also the author of the new book about Google called In the Plex.
So Larry Page once said, Google is not a conventional company and we do not intend to become one. But Google has become a public company with more than 20,000 employees, making tens of billions of dollars. Is Page taking over a company that's more conventional than he might like?
I think that's the case. Google is in a position of denying gravity in a way, and it's ironic because it's a company that prides itself on looking at data and logic. But in order to succeed and continue to succeed as it has been, it really has to think and act and be nimble like a smaller company than it really is. So it keeps thinking of innovative ways to pretend it's a small company with the hunger and nimbleness of a startup.
Well, Larry Page, though, do things differently than Eric Schmidt. I mean, way back when, Eric Schmidt was the corporate manager that was brought in sort of for adult supervision.
Well, I think Larry will do things differently. But in a way, Larry's values have always been the core values of Google. Even while Eric was the CEO, it was Larry whose obsession with speed and scale, ambition and artificial intelligence, and these are values he shared with his co-founder, Sergey Brin. But, you know, those were the things that Google engineers held up as ideals there. Eric's job was sort of to sit back with a rudder and sort of steer that ambition and those huge goals and, you know, sometimes audacious projects that Larry would set Google on. So it'll be interesting to see what happens when Eric's hand doesn't really reach over to Larry's shoulder and say, well, maybe Larry, not now, which has happened a lot over the years.
Well, Larry Page has been known as a geek visionary. So what might he do, given the company that he's becoming CEO of?
Well, one thing, I think we'd expect more of what they call moonshots, things that most outsiders would say is beyond what Google should be doing. The idea of sticking to your knitting, which is a big cliche in the corporate world, is something that's very alien to Larry. So whether it's scanning all the books in the world or more recently developing cars that drive themselves, these are the kinds of things that interest Larry. And in another sense, it'll be things like applying novel ways to controlling a multi-billion-dollar company. For instance, just since he's been announced to be the CEO, he's really taken over in that role already. And he's had innovations like key managers, the different divisions of Google, all get together a few afternoons a week and work together as if in a war room situation. They sit in there with their and they do their emails and they connect with their divisions. But if something just comes to them at the spur of the moment, they say, hey, maybe the company should do this, or here's what I'm doing out there in the Android division. What do you think of that? How's that going to work with search? And the head of search will be there.
How worried is Larry Page about what might be called their biggest competitor, and that'd be Facebook?
Google is in a Facebook panic right now because their biggest fear is that Facebook, which is going to approach a billion users eventually, will be creating and sharing information that Google can't get hold of in its indexes. And that's really going to weaken all the things that Google wants to do. And that's why it's a super high priority for Google. And now for Larry, who's really changed his focus since he became CEO, to develop products that are going to allow it not to maybe directly to compete with Facebook, but to give it that same stake in personal information that might bring Facebook to the table and allow it to share information with Google.
Stephen Levy is the author of the new book, In the Plex. He spoke with NPR's Renee Montaigne. The NCAA Men's Championship game is tonight in Houston between Butler and Connecticut. On Saturday night, after the Bulldogs earned a second consecutive appearance in the title game, one reporter turned to another and said, if Butler wins, it'll be the biggest upset since the Miracle on Ice. NPR's Mike Pesca picks up the story there.
Now, it won't be the biggest upset. The University of Connecticut is only a modest favorite, but we all know the lore around Butler, the cast-off kids who were lightly recruited by the big-time schools, the small campus, the cerebral coach. They're in the words of Butler student Chris Clark.
I still think we're America's team.
I found some other undergrads hanging out in Houston who admitted to rooting for the Bulldogs.
Did you watch last year's national championship game?
Yeah, I did.
Who were you rooting for?
I was rooting for Butler.
I was rooting for Butler because it was the underdog.
Yeah, I was going for Butler and the underdog.
Those, in case you didn't guess, were all UConn players. Benjamin Stewart, the last one there, was asked to make the case for UConn to a 10-year-old from Erie, Pennsylvania, which is halfway between Indianapolis and Connecticut's home of stores. This 10-year-old needs a team. Why should he root for UConn?
I don't see why you wouldn't root for us.
Left unaddressed was one reason why a lot of college basketball fans are not fans of UConn. Some think their coach, Jim Calhoun, is tyrannical. But his players all love him, and even Calhoun showed a softer side yesterday. He told me he loves Broadway musicals. He's seen In the Heights 3 times. And he roots for underdogs, like, say, Butler. Calhoun says he'd love to see a smaller school win the national championship.
I think if it starts around 2012, 2013, it'd be a wonderful thing.
Of course, he demands that other schools do their winning on his timetable. Mike Pesca, NPR News, Houston.
It's time to donate your CDs, records, DVDs, tapes, and working stereo equipment to the 2011 Vintage Vinyl Sale for the Illinois Radio Reader. Just take your donations to any Busey Bank office in Champaign, Urbana, or Savoy. Call me, Dean Geiken, at 217-333-6503 for more information.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Monday. It's the 4th of April, 2011. It was on this day in 1968, Martin Luther King Jr. was assassinated while he stood on the second-story balcony of the Lorraine Motel in Memphis, Tennessee. He'd gone there to